So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-WMFO. That's the new telephone number. Welcome back if you're just getting back to campus. The new phone number is 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. Dial those digits. Be a part of the show. Which we might be changing the name of to the Basket of Deplorables. What do you think, Lisa?
Yeah, we're pretty deplorable.
Derek and Lisa Nichols, the Basket of Deplorables. Yeah. We're going to be talking about that later tonight and figuring out whether or not we qualify. I think we do.
I think the name is very fitting for us.
I think you're the crazy gun lady, and I've got some interesting views.
You have your quirks. I think that's what we'll call it, quirks.
I think we qualify as part of the Basket of Deplorables.
Yes.
In Hillary Clinton's world. Dark out.
Yeah, it's going to rain. It is going to rain.
Yeah, keep an eye out for thunderstorms in the next hour or so after 8 o'clock. That danger passes. Mm. But this is the last show of the summer.
Oh, it is. We've gone through the meteorological autumn.
You almost got it.
Meteorological autumn.
Summer ended on the 1st. Meteorological autumn began on the 1st. But now the calendar autumn.
The new solstice is September 23rd.
Yeah. So we've actually got one more show. Yeah, we got one more show. But this is the second
right
to
on
last.
The cusp. But again, we were talking about it last week, how dark it is early, and I hate it.
Listen, football's back, okay? Yeah. American Horror Story's on tonight. The new South Park season premieres tonight.
It's a good time to be alive, Derek Carey.
Gotham's on Monday. It's fall. I'm calling it right here. It's fall. Forget it.
We were just talking about the Big E going on, you know, outside of Springfield,
yeah.
And it's fall season where it's apple picking, fair foods.
Can we stop with the apple picking and the pumpkin spice nonsense?
Oh, I'll be sure to tag you in all my pictures I post when I do go apple picking.
That's the downside of fall is all the freaking pumpkin beer.
Yeah. You know how I feel about that pumpkin beer.
Yeah. Nope. I think you're generally more amenable to it than I am. But either way, what do we got going on in the world, Lisa Nichols?
Well, today in local news, we learned hundreds of drug convictions could be in jeopardy after an internal audit. Prosecutors have dropped drug charges against five defendants amid an investigation into missing evidence from the Braintree Police Department that could upend hundreds of more cases. During a brief hearing in the Norfolk Superior Court in Denham on Tuesday, prosecutors dropped cocaine trafficking charges against two people after 29 grams of cocaine that police said were found inside their vehicle went missing. Prosecutors on Monday also dismissed drug trafficking charges against another three defendants, including two people who police said were arrested with 81 grams of heroin, according to court documents. Norfolk District Attorney Michael Morrissey said Tuesday that his office is anxiously awaiting the final audit of the evidence room of the Braintree Mayor Joseph Sullivan said he wants to gauge the scope of the potential damages to the case, even though he said it it is likely to be extensive. The mayor said he's concerned about the number of cases that our charges would be dropped. Quote, I think that we're all very uncomfortable and we don't have any options. We understand people have their constitutional rights. End quote, Sullivan said. Morrissey said his office has already begun vetting 3,000 Braintree cases from the period of June 13th to May 2016, and prosecutors will have to take a hard look at between 200 and 400 cases. So this actually was launched back in June. Braintree officials, they launched this audit of the evidence room. So far, it's found evidence, you know, including drugs, guns, cash, mishandled or completely missing. Interesting fact here, Officer Lauren Zopati, or Susan Zopati, she had been in charge of the evidence room. She died back in May from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So,
it was a bullet fired by one of the missing guns.
Yeah, this is
a bit of a problem. Handful of drug cases aren't going to be prosecuted. That's really neither here nor there. You know, that's one of those headlines that, oh, the drug traffickers are going to go free. No, some guy who was dealing a little bit of crack cocaine or something is going to get a second chance to get arrested for dealing crack cocaine.
Yeah, but Derek, we're not talking about 1, 2, 3 cases. We're talking about there are, as I just said, looking at 3,000 cases.
It's not going to be 3,000
cases. With the possibility of around 200 to 400 actually being dismissed.
Yeah, it's not.
And I mean, this is something, though, you know, it's really unclear at far as the evidence issue goes with Braintree, how it's going to ripple out. And essentially, you know, you had 380 cases dismissed in a single day in Brockton when police chief mishandled evidence and started stealing all the cash and stealing all the drugs and guns. That was in the late 80s. And then most famously, Annie Duncan.
Right, but Annie Duncan worked in the state lab. Every case that was being prosecuted went through there. I'll be surprised if it gets as high as 240 cases are thrown out.
Really?
Yeah, I will.
But again, not even just looking at numbers, looking at the time period, over 3 years.
Yeah, but the bigger issue here is
that... The big issue is what is going on
there. Yeah, somebody's stealing drugs and guns out of the evidence lockup. Where are those drugs and guns going? Well, they're probably going on the street, mm-hmm. and it would behoove the town of Braintree to figure out who the heck is taking all this stuff and get them off the force and get them in jail.
Well, again, if we're looking at back from, what is it, June 2013, what has happened in the past 3 years? What's going on? Nobody's noticing that there's missing cash, there's missing guns, there's drugs just showing up, you know, outside of the evidence room.
For some of that period, it's entirely possible that they knew and they were keeping an eye on it to see if they could figure out who was doing it.
They couldn't figure out quicker?
No, because that's you're running an investigation. Sometimes that's what it takes. Whoever's doing it may have been going in once every 6 months and just loading up boxes with stuff and walking out the door.
So what is it, the big red flag when the person that's in charge of the evidence room shoots herself?
That would have been, if she'd caught wind of the investigation, that may be the reason why she shot herself.
Mm-hmm.
Her suicide and the disclosure of the investigation some months later, I will guarantee you, are not coincidental. That does not read like coincidence.
But then it also opens up the question of, was it actually self-inflicted? Could we have a situation here where she found out what was going on? Somebody was in charge of this ring that was pulling evidence out, pulling cash, drugs, guns, and oops, accidentally shows up with a suicide.
I don't know that you're going to find that there was a ring involved in this. I think you're going to find out it was one, maybe two people, which doesn't really, it's conspiracy obviously, but doesn't quite amount to a ring.
Yeah, if you look at many of the cases, Michael Dowd, he has a great documentary of his time in the New York City police, and was saying how, especially in the 80s and early 90s, for the majority in your major cities, you had not huge, massive rings, but you had a group of people that would go into, you know, suspected drug houses, take the money, take the drugs, and it was all people involved. Basically, everybody was watching each other's back.
But in the
generally, if it's one single person, more than likely, you're going to get caught. If there's something going on where there's a few people involved, then you have a little more wiggle room
in the 80s,
to get away with it.
In the 80s and the 90s, you could get away with that sort of thing. You can't get away with it now because everything is tracked and barcoded. And
but can you? I mean, look at this.
Well, this is why I say you're going to find out that it was one, maybe two people who were involved in this. Mm-hmm. And whoever was doing it either had a serious drug addiction or some desperate personal problem going on that they were stealing this stuff for the money. Well, it's one of those situations. You're not going to find organization here.
No, it's generally about the money. It's all about the money.
This is somebody who's desperate. This is my fearless prediction right here. This is somebody who's desperate, who thinks they know the system so well and they're so clever that they can find a way of getting around it. It may turn out to be that it was the woman in charge of the evidence room that was taking the evidence, mm-hmm. either to pay off debts or to keep her boyfriend from hitting her, or she was unhappy, whatever it was. But we'll find out soon.
Yeah, it's that interesting little tidbit that throws it into the story that you're like kind of scratching your head going,
Yeah.
That's coincidental.
At the very least, anybody who's guilty in this is going to try and pin it on her and throw her under the bus because she's not there to defend herself.
But ultimately, what happens because of this? We have people, and I think you're downplaying it just a bit.
No.
Saying that there's, a few people that got, we're not talking about small-time drug peddlers. We're talking about people that are convicted with 50-plus grams of heroin and cocaine.
Is that a meaningful quantity?
Again, we are living in a state where we are having a rampant opium problem, opioid with heroin. I would rather keep them off the street, personally.
El Chapo.
I mean, you're playing it off like...
El Chapo is...
You know...
Look, El Chapo is not going to walk free because of what happened in Braintree. There are no major drug cases that are going to be jeopardized by this because Braintree isn't holding on to that evidence.
But are there...
The
do
feds
you have,
are.
Do you have a list of every single conviction that was put through Braintree? I would love to see it.
No, but if you're talking about interstate drug trafficking, that automatically goes up to the federal level. And we have a U.S. Attorney's Office here in Boston that handles all those prosecutions. So the evidence is not in Braintree. The evidence is somewhere in Courthouse Square. So some cop is going to go to jail. Maybe a couple cops go to jail. It's an amusing story. And
yeah, but with drug cases, doesn't it initially start in the city that it happens in? So even if it does move from the city, then moves to the feds, you could have a prosecutor that says, gotta get rid of it. Because at one point, it did pass through that evidence room. Whether it was held for 24 hours or whether it was held for a week, they have some ground to stand on to say, you got to get rid of that.
The town of
it doesn't go just straight from the arrest to the FBI. There is a point in time where it is held by the town, or the city.
The town of Braintree isn't getting anything other than a street level dealer. They're not getting mules. They're not getting major traffickers. They're not getting the guys that pull the strings. Because as soon as they
look at some of the cases that happen in Lawrence,
as soon as they pick one of those guys up, Lawrence is a very different town than Braintree. As soon as they pick one of those guys up. Okay, it flashes at the U.S. Attorney's Office, it flashes at the FBI, and they come in and they scoop up these people.
Yeah, and they have to bring them into the Braintree Police Station initially.
And they get the evidence at the same time. They come in and they take everything same day. If anybody on their radar
but
gets picked up...
But the evidence is not sitting in the lobby of the Braintree Police Station waiting for the feds to get there. At some point, I'm sure it is processed in the Braintree Police Station, and then sent out.
Yeah, but anybody
as far as how I understand
anybody who's
the
pulling
workings
this,
of police.
Anybody who's pulling this scam is taking evidence that's been sitting there for a while. You're trying to take stuff that won't be missed. You're not taking stuff that came in that day. Because that stuff is needed in court, potentially the next day. You're going to have lawyers coming in looking for it. You're going to have investigators coming in looking for it. You're going to have a lot of people coming in looking for it. If you're going to steal from an evidence locker, you're going to steal stuff that's 6 months to a year old that you hope nobody is going to miss.
No, absolutely. And I'm not saying that, but I'm also saying that prosecutors do have some ground to stand on when saying they were arrested by Braintree Police. They were processed in the station. At one point, the evidence, I'm going to get my client out of this.
Every attorney is going to try that tactic.
Of course.
And some of them will succeed.
So just in 2 days, we've already had 5 cases dismissed.
Two days.
Again, not every, for somebody that's, has a little weed in their pocket.
Every attorney is going to try that. And some of these people are going to walk, and some of these people aren't, because the evidence is still going to be there. So that's the way this is. This is nowhere near the level of Andy Doukan. Andy Doukan was a massive statewide catastrophe.
Well, that's Andy Doukan, where we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of cases.
40 cases will be dismissed on this. That's my prediction. Fearless prediction. 40 cases. In national news, former Secretary of State Colin Powell had some things to say about the presidential election in hacked emails shared by DC leaks. What he had to say depends on who your source is. In the most startling example of media bias to date this year, headlines generally focused on Trump attacks, even though the emails skewed toward attacks on Hillary Clinton. The New York Times led with, "Colin Powell in hacked email calls Trump national disgrace." CNN led with, "Colin Powell, Trump is world pariah." And the Huffington Post led with, "Colin Powell thinks Trump is a national disgrace, leaked emails reveal." Fox News got to the meat of the story with a headline reading, "Powell warned Clinton not to make him fall guy over email scandal, leaked messages reveal." While the Washington Post went with the balanced approach, writing, "Here are the juiciest Colin Powell comments about Trump and Clinton from his hacked emails." Glenn Greenwald's The Intercept also highlighted the Clinton connection with the headline, "Colin Powell urged Hillary Clinton's team not to scapegoat him for her private server, leaked emails reveal." And I was a little surprised, you know, look, this is a story that you can bend any way that you want,
mm-hmm.
but it's also a story that, apart from the content of these emails, which is for the most part hilarious, this is a story that completely illustrates who's on which side. New York Times, in the basket for Hillary Clinton. They're in the basket of deplorables. CNN, in the basket for Hillary Clinton. We know the Huffington Post is in the basket for Clinton. We know MSNBC is in the basket for Clinton. Honestly, the New York Times is a little bit surprising.
That you're gonna
lead with the Trump criticism when the ongoing story is Hillary Clinton's private server use and the fact that Colin Powell got dragged into it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Colin Powell saying, "I told them not to drag me into it." And apparently he was screaming at one of
Hillary's
campaign workers at a party over the summer, basically saying, "Keep me out of this thing."
Mm-hmm. I think New York Times is very pro Hillary Clinton. The point that you just made, exactly. This is a situation, and of course, we are in the political months leading up to. We knew that after Labor Day, this is, you know, some of the biggest stories. We have this hack come out, and it's so interesting, as you said, where each media outlet was going with it. What was their angle? Who were they more pushing for to make look bad? And I'm going to say 80% of it was against Trump and pro-Hillary. It's crazy. You would think that it would be completely split. Or at least, because we understand the news media world, you're supposed to be unbiased.
Yeah.
This is what you're supposed to do as a job. This is what you learn. This is what you go to school for.
Washington Post was. CBS was. They both led with, here's, you know, Colin Powell had things to say about both candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Fox and Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept led with the actual story, which is Colin Powell had things to say about Hillary's claim that he told her to use a private server, which did not happen. This is another lie that Hillary Clinton has been caught in, and that's how this should be read. Hillary Clinton lied again. Colin Powell never told her to use a private server, but he's been dragged into it, and now here are the facts.
Mm-hmm.
CNN doesn't want you to know that. CNN doesn't even touch the Hillary Clinton comments until two-thirds of the way down the article.
National Network.
At which point...
Did they rename it yet?
Most people are going to tune out.
Mm-hmm.
New York Times, same thing. Top half of the article is all about, well, they called Trump a disgrace, and Trump's an international pariah, and Trump this, and Trump that. That's not news. That is a personal opinion of the former Secretary of State, who, by the way, has some very choice things to say about Donald Trump and black people. Basically saying that Donald Trump's support of the birther movement was racist, that Donald Trump has 1% support among black Americans, and he's crazy if he thinks that blacks are going to forget his birther push.
Mm-hmm.
All legitimate. But that's all opinion. there's no news there.
But he was giving an opinion to both people. It's just like, Derek, if you had your emails hacked or even text messages, any general person would find out that you have some pro and negative opinions about maybe your friends or people that you...
They probably wouldn't, actually.
Okay. Not you, the average person.
The average person, yes. Me, no.
Okay.
Me, no. Because I don't say anything in an email that I wouldn't say to somebody's face. Mm. I don't.
But for the average person, you're going to write good and bad things about people, depending maybe on the day you had. And this is exactly what just happened. It was chock full of opinion. But yes, you have to get to the meat of it. And one of the stories, as you said, the meat of it is talking about Hillary Clinton lied. She's trying to make me look stupid.
Here's the news angle in this. Because Hillary Clinton said Colin Powell said it was okay. Here's email from Colin Powell specifically saying, I never told her that. I told her to keep me out of it. What happened with me and what happened with her are totally different things. Here's one line of his from the emails. Quote, it is no secret that I used an unclassified personal email account in addition to my classified state computer. And this is something he actually wrote to the New York Times in an email. He told people to read his book. He told reporters to read his book, where he spends an entire chapter talking about upgrading the IT system. Because when he came into state, he was like, this system is
complete mess.
Is from the 80s. Mm-hmm. This doesn't work for me. So he used his personal AOL account for personal email, and he used a State Department secured account for the classified email.
I know people are still using AOL accounts.
He then had this to say. This was one of my favorites. Quote, they're going to dick up the legitimate and necessary use of emails with effing record rules. I saw email more like a telephone than a cable machine, Powell said. And then goes on talking to Jeffrey Leeds, who he works with. Then goes on to say, quote, as long as the stuff is unclassified, I had a secure state.gov machine. Everything HRC, Hillary Rodham Clinton, touches, she kind of screws up with hubris. And then he goes on to say, this is the best of all of them. Quote, I told you about the gig I lost at a university because she so overcharged them that they came under heat and couldn't any fees for a while. I should send her a bill. Love that. I should send her a bill.
Yeah, he's pissed.
Colin Powell is the man.
He lost the money.
Is the man. Yeah.
Now, do we know who it was hacked from or who released it?
Fancy Bear came out and said, hey, this is us.
Which?
We've talked about there are the two Russian hacking organizations. Yeah. Fancy Bear is the one that they believe is sponsored by Russian intelligence services. Russian intelligence has since come out and said, yet, we do not hack Powell's email.
You know, it's really interesting, though, the conversation that's been going on about how really Russia is standing in a position where they can not completely direct the way of the election, but they are, by releasing these, are putting our media in a position where then they can spend their message to us.
They're putting our media in a position where they can make themselves look bad. Because as I laid out at the start of this, you have CNN, the New York Times, the Huffington Post, you know, and all of the usual suspects. Colin Powell calls Trump a pariah. Colin Powell calls Trump an embarrassment. Colin Powell, Trump won't win blacks. All opinion. No news. You have Glenn Greenwald, who you may remember from the Edward Snowden leak, now runs his own gig called The Intercept. And you have CBS, or you have Glenn Greenwald and Fox News coming out and saying, Colin Powell said he did not tell Hillary to use a private email server. That's news, because Hillary Clinton has accused Colin Powell of saying it was okay.
It's strange when we're actually congratulating.
That's a lie. Hillary lied, and these emails prove it. So you have two outlets, Glenn Greenwald and The Intercept and Fox News, that are basically telling you the truth.
But again, that's being completely overshadowed by what you just said about the negatives of Trump. This is what the average, I don't even want to call it, attention span of Americans, because we block out what is actual news and just want to find out what he's saying about her or what she's saying about him.
I don't think it's that we necessarily block it out. We don't even have access to it in the first place. People look at CNN and they look at the New York Times.
Yeah, but many of these articles will lead with that headline, and you have to go down maybe 5-6 paragraphs before you get to what he also said about Trump.
Right.
I mean, about Clinton.
But here's the thing.
But people don't read that. We read headlines. We live in a society where everybody just reads headlines.
CNN, you couldn't even find the article on their homepage in the first place because they had it buried over in the side in small type. And then when you open it up, nothing about Clinton until more than 2/3 of the way through the article. And the meat of the story is that Colin Powell, in email, calls Hillary Clinton a liar. Didn't say it in those exact words. Mm-hmm.
But
over and over again.
Read it and have your own opinion about it and say, all right.
Don't involve me in this. Mm-hmm. Don't drag me into this. That's not what I told you. And he's trying to be the good politician. He's trying to be the team player here in all of this by not coming out and saying, well, she lied and all the rest of that. But the meat of this story that several major outlets have decided isn't the meat of the story, isn't important to you, the American voter, is that Colin Powell is here saying Hillary lied about this. That's the story. Not, oh, he thinks Trump's a pariah. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Who cares? That's not the story. And Colin Powell got hacked is not the story. And Fancy Bear is not the story.
This probably garnered a few minutes of coverage if you were watching CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Fox News pushed it a little bit more. But in the afternoon, I was watching some of the stations. And for the majority of the conversation that was going on with the Clinton versus Trump narrative was talking about health and how Trump was going on Dr. Oz. Is that so important right now in our political scheme? No, this is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the major leaders of our country that has things to say that are very interesting about our two presidential candidates that we are going to be choosing in November.
The Dr. Oz program got somewhere in the range of $15 million of free promotion today across all the major media outlets. So I assume they're going to have good ratings tomorrow. Maybe I need to go on and offer to share my medical records. Tell them, tune us in on WMFO Medford. In world news, in a rare move, North Korea has appealed for international aid after floods destroyed tens of thousands of homes in the country's northeast region. The United Nations, citing North Korean data, said that 133 people were killed, 395 are missing, and 140,000 need urgent assistance. The situation will become more dire in just a few weeks if shelter cannot be made available, as October temperatures in the northeast of North Korea can drop below zero. So, Monday, they're testing nuclear weapons. Wednesday,
yeah, exactly. I mean, the news of this natural disaster follows North Korea on Friday saying that they've successfully conducted its fifth nuclear test. And, you know, again, it warranted widespread international condemnation. Same thing, further sanctions were said by many other countries. But, you know, just to think of the outpouring of support North Korea could have from other nations, not only ours, if they didn't make these idiotic claims.
But they'll get it. But they'll get it. In a situation like this, everybody sets the differences aside.
Nuclear annihilation.
Everybody sets the differences aside, and it's like, what can we do? What do you need? They'll get the aid that they need. There's no
because
doubt in my mind about that.
Them, we do. We're a little more humane.
Yeah, but it'll filter through the UN. It'll filter through China. You know, half of the Western world is going to try and get spies in there now, masquerading as aid workers, if they think they can, to find out what's going on. But they will get aid. You know, it's no one is such an enemy that we will turn their back on them when a natural disaster strikes.
No, of course. We're not going to have a situation where a country, we leave the people of the country to try to go against the government, which would be amazing to see if the people stood up and went against, you know, Kim Jong-un.
That's not going to happen.
Of course, you know, it's not like the people will revolt. No tyrannical government that has ever existed, and especially North Korea being one, would ever see a situation like that. It could never be thrown within.
Interestingly, the part
just
of
doesn't
North,
happen.
The part of North Korea that was affected by these floods is the part of North Korea that has the largest concentration of prison colonies. So it's actually the people who are political prisoners that have been driven from their homes.
No, has any of the land been affected for crops? I mean,
what? It's North Korea. There's no crops.
There's nothing?
There's nothing. They can't grow anything there anymore.
Rice, nothing.
No, no. Maybe this will help with the famine a little bit if they're getting regular rain over there. Mm-hmm. But this is like what happened in West Virginia earlier this year. This is entire communities washed off the map. This is a complete disaster for them. So, wishing them well. I don't know where you said. I guess if you donate, if you want to donate, the American Red Cross or Doctors Without Borders will definitely be involved in the recovery for this. The International Red Cross. Actually,
that's an interesting moment. You're like, who should I donate to? Who's hurting really bad? Oh, you know what? Let me write and take out my checkbook and write a check for North Korea.
Well, the International Red Cross already has a presence over there.
Because people's first instinct is, why give money to North Korea so that they can, plan more bombs?
140,000.
It's crazy.
140,000 people have lost their homes and risk freezing to death in a month. So, you know, say what you will about the leadership.
Try to put aside where they are.
So you're still about the leadership and the politics and the nuclear program. This is about people freezing to death. And if we can avoid that, that's a good thing.
Well, in sports today, we learned North Carolina politics are affecting its sports. The NCAA responding to contentious North Carolina law that curbed anti-discrimination protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people will relocate all championship tournament games scheduled to take place in the state over the upcoming academic year, the organization announced on Monday night. Among the events affected is the Division I men's basketball tournament, the NCAA's most prominent annual event, which of the first and second round games scheduled to be played in Greensboro in March. The announcement followed the NBA's decision in July to move its 2017 All-Star Game out of Charlotte, but was seen as a particularly substantial blow to officials in North Carolina, where college basketball is central to the state's culture and pride. North Carolina has hosted men's basketball tournaments more than any other state in NCAA history. In a statement explaining the decision by the Board of Governors, which is largely made up of institutional presidents and chancellors, the NCAA said, quote, NCAA championship and events must promote an inclusive atmosphere for all college athletes, coaches, administrators, and fans. Current North Carolina state laws make it challenging to guarantee that host communities can deliver on that commitment, end quote. So, well, the NCAA,
their main reason for doing this is because students in state schools in states that have prohibited state travel to North Carolina wouldn't be able to attend.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are a student in a state school, that affects you. So if Massachusetts says nobody can go to North Carolina because we don't like this bathroom bill, then UMass students can't go. Salem State students can't go. It really only affects UMass. It's the only good basketball program we have in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I right about that? Maybe there's another one.
But, you know, NCAA, this isn't something new. They've previously supported the protections of, you know, LGBT and transgender people. Just last year, remember when there was the, what was that? The Final Four was supposed to be held in Indianapolis. And they said, not only that, but NCAA headquarters is in Indianapolis. And they said, we don't agree with one of these bills. We're going to pull out. And essentially what happens when something like the NBA, which for the NBA, the 2017 All-Star Game, I mean, who's the biggest, best player in NBA history? You would say Michael Jordan. That must have been a huge hit. I mean, he is Mr. North Carolina. And to see that happen. But again, what happens when these big franchises and pull out money? It's all about money.
$80 million is the estimated loss for North mm-hmm. Carolina. So that's how committed they are to their hate. They are $80 million committed to their hate in North Carolina.
Yeah. And no, but taking money, taking some, all the money, this is what brings change. Look at Arizona, for example. What, for so many years, they didn't celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday, and how many organizations didn't play in games there? And what, just over the past 10 years, how many Super Bowls have been played there? How many NBA finals?
Right.
Or NBA events, All-Star games? That is money. Of course.
Well, there's a Boston comic used to do a joke that I always loved. How much do you hate black people that you don't want a day off? You know, it's Martin Luther King. Just, like, take it. You know, everybody wants a Monday off after Christmas. The depth of the insanity in North Carolina is probably best summed up by Cammie Mueller, who, for reasons I cannot fathom, is the spokeswoman of the North Carolina Republican Party. And, by the way, an embarrassment to us all. She had this to say in response to the first loss of tournaments from the NCAA. Quote, "This is so absurd, it's almost comical. I genuinely look forward to the NCAA merging all men's and women's teams together as singular, unified, unisex teams. Welcome to La La Land. Under the NCAA's logic, colleges should make cheerleaders and football players share bathrooms, showers, and hotel rooms. This decision is an assault to female athletes across the nation. If you are unwilling to have women's bathrooms and locker rooms, how do you have a women's team? I wish the NCAA was this concerned about the women who were raped at Baylor." Ah, yes.
Yes.
Let's throw the straw man in there. "Perhaps the NCAA should stop with their political peacocking and instead focus their energies on making sure our nation's collegiate athletes are safe, both on and off the field."
Derek, if you were wondering if, you know, crazy people still exist, they do.
And they're in the North Carolina Republican Party posting things on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, Monday's decision, it's obviously to be sure to have these real economic ramifications that we know are going to happen. The biggest question is if this, and this is from Governor Pat McCrory. He's the one that pushed this bathroom bill, as it was called, and
House Bill 2, as it is affectionately known.
What will happen? What's going to change? Because you are going to see more sports leagues, further activism from them on the state and local level. Is North Carolina going to change? Can they take that hit economically for it?
They seem to think they can.
What do you think is going to happen first? Do you think if he does get reelected, do you think that they are going to keep it the way that it is, or you're going to have somebody else come in and change it?
You know, perspective on this, I mean, that $80 million is bonus money. You know, these championships don't roll into town all the time. You know, you're going to get an NBA All-Star game, you know, once every 20, 30 years maybe, and it's going to throw $40 million in the state coffers, and then it's gone. You're not going to get that money again. So it's sort of a one-time windfall. And from that perspective, North Carolina can sit there and say, you know what, take your collegiate sports championships and stuff them. Mm-hmm. We're not interested. We would rather continue to hate on the trans people and keep them from living their lives than take your filthy academic student-athlete money.
It's interesting, though, and we've had this conversation before when we've been talking about NCAA, especially football and basketball, how much having either them pull out or sponsors pull out can affect things that are going on with colleges and whatnot. And this is another perfect example. The power of sports and the power of how much money is involved with sports. Because we're not talking about, you know, just a couple $100,000 that are rolling into the city. We're talking about millions and billions of dollars in these organizations that they're bringing to the city. Not only just to host them, but also that the surrounding communities are getting that much more in hotels, restaurants,
but you know what?
And revenues.
I read you Cammie Mueller's statement earlier. You know, we're I don't know what the most ridiculous line is in this thing. It's either I genuinely look forward to the NCAA merging all men's and women's teams together as singular, unified, unisex teams, or I wish the NCAA was this concerned about the women who were raped at Baylor. One of those two,
they're pretty equal,
is the stupidest thing in that statement. This is a deep well of ignorance that you're dealing with here. And perhaps
delusion is,
if we elect Donald Trump, we can persuade him to build a wall around North Carolina, and then they can be free to live there in their ignorance. Because that's precisely what this is. This is an irrational person. And these aren't rational people that you're dealing with. These are people that are terrified of some transgender boogie person coming in and assaulting the children in the bathroom. There is next to no evidence of that happening.
Exactly.
And there is actually zero evidence of that happening before the media started suggesting that to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Before the media said, oh my God, men are going to dress up as women and go into the girls' room. Well, you know what? We've had a couple of cases of that now.
And when we talked about this, Bill, we said that exact same thing. It's amazing to me, and I hate that majority of it was coming from the Republican Party, but I'm talking so far right, where they're putting up posters of exactly like you just said, a man dressed up as a woman going into a bathroom and there's little kids around. When does that ever happen? And again, there is no evidence of that happening.
This is everything that is wrong with the Republican Party right now. This is everything that is wrong with them. This is also everything that is wrong with these elites in our state and federal government, because I'm not sure that the majority of people in South Carolina support this bill. I haven't seen any polls on it lately. I know there was support for it initially. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they support it now. I don't know how many people support it. But I have a feeling if we went down and we polled the people in South Carolina,
they want basketball.
We would find that the average South Carolinian either doesn't care.
Well, they care more about basketball than bathrooms.
Either doesn't care, or they think the law is ridiculous and unnecessary. But, oh boy, for the sake of currying favor with some hardcore right-wingers, the North Carolina Republican Party is going to go out on this ridiculous limb and condemn the NCAA for dealing with practical reality and encouraging inclusiveness rather than say, maybe we made a mistake here. Maybe this bill is not a good idea. Idiots.
Well, today in food news, we learned the sugar industry is not as sweet and innocent as we thought. The sugar industry sponsored research to downplay the role of sugar and promote fat as a key cause of heart disease, a report has revealed. Researchers at the University of San Francisco made the discovery as part of a historical review of the sugar lobby's internal documents. They published their findings in the journal JAMA International Medicine. Early signs sugar plays a key role in heart disease emerged in the 1950s, a stance now widely accepted. Yet the sugar industry paid Harvard scientists during the 1950s and 60s to publish research saying fat was the key cause. The research became a cornerstone of belief in the Western diet, with saturated fat and cholesterol being identified as the biggest problem that misled people as to the dangers of sugar. One influential project in 1965, funded by the Sugar Association, formerly the Sugar Research Foundation, SRF, as it was also known, was a literature review published by the New England Journal of Medicine. The group paid the modern equivalent of $50,000 to the project, which argued cholesterol, not sucrose, was a key factor in preventing heart disease. University of San Francisco researchers found that the SRF set the objective of the review, contributed articles for inclusion, and received drafts of the paper. Not a good look for the sugar industry. Are you surprised, though? I feel like...
Does this mean we can eat all the saturated fat that we want?
I know.
Can I go out and just gorge myself on saturated fat and I'll be fine now?
But this was not shocking to me. Figuring that you have lobbyists or big corporations that are paying people.
Of course.
I figured that was the norm. And it's so funny, all these headlines coming out in the past day and saying, like, sugar's actually bad. Like, it was a big surprise to everybody.
Too much sugar's bad for you?
Yeah.
Shocker.
I mean, the average person has the intelligence to understand that, a large amount of sugar is bad for you.
You know what?
That we're not completely brainwashed by... medical journals and research that have somehow warped our brains to think that saturated fat is really the bad thing.
But this is where the dumbing down of health and medical information in this country really hurts us. It's not that sugar's bad for you. It's not that trans fats actually in any form are bad for you. It's not that sugar's bad for you. It's not that saturated fat is bad for you. It's not that alcohol is bad for you. It's that excess is bad for you. You know what's unhealthy? Obesity.
Mm-hmm.
obesity is bad for you.
And you know that how you get obese?
That is something.
Having excess of all those things that you just listed.
That is something that every doctor can agree on. Obesity is bad for you. Obesity kills. Obesity causes heart disease. It causes strokes. It causes cancer. It causes diabetes. It causes all kinds of things that will kill you. The way that you get to obesity is sitting around, eating too much sugar, eating too much saturated fat. Certain individuals need to stay away from these things entirely, okay, because of their physical makeup. But as a whole, yes, of course, too much sugar is going to contribute to heart disease. Of course, too much fat's going to contribute to heart disease.
Too much of anything is bad for you.
We should know that man is an omnivore, okay? We're meant to eat meat. We're meant to eat vegetables. We're meant to eat fish. We're not meant to eat bread. We can have all the sugar beets we want, but you probably shouldn't be gorging yourself on Coca-Cola or drinking as much Mountain Dew as I do. I don't drink that much Mountain Dew anymore.
You just have the one a week? Is that your...
No. I have the one a day. Sometimes two.
It's so bad. And I was just going to say that's the amount down, of sugar in that.
That's way down from where I was.
I believe that
Can we talk about the white... or the
soda.
Can we talk about the marble cake with frosting I had for lunch?
Oh.
I've been eating those every day, too. I need to stop the
sugar.
Why
are you eating cake?
Because it has frosting on it. I love the frosting. I am so bad.
Are you bringing cake in, or was it somebody's birthday in the office?
It's at the supermarket. I get a salad.
So you bring cake for lunch.
I get a salad.
I mean, not Derek, not that I'm knocking that.
I get a salad.
I told you what I had for breakfast,
you had poutine for breakfast.
Which was so much better than yours.
No, I just...
You had sugar. You had...
I had too much sugar. You had
sugar cream.
Too much of everything in the poutine. There's sugar in that. There's fat in that. There's gravy. There's starch. Like, everything that you shouldn't eat.
And I'm a happier person for
it. I just had some cake, all right? Just some cake.
Let a man eat his cake.
Yeah. No, I get a salad, and then I get the cake. And then I pick up the cake, and I'm like, I got to stop eating the cake.
So you're one of those people that justify it. I'm eating salad for lunch.
I was really healthy, and then I discovered the cake. Actually, I discovered the whoopie pies. But back to the story, if we can ever get back to the story. I don't care. Of course it was sponsored by the sugar people. All the early tobacco studies were sponsored by the cigarette industry. Mm-hmm. You know?
We see this all the time when, you know, so many millions of dollars are spent on these research projects to come to conclusions of things that we already knew.
Yeah.
I mean, couldn't that money be spent elsewhere?
It's not like the study came out and said, 3 cups of sugar a day is good for you. Mm. You know, then I think you can go after them and say, you are deliberately poisoning the American people. Not, oh no, sugar's fine. You know, it's like...
No, they were just trying to highlight that saturated fat, or highlight their enemy or somebody that they're competing with. I guess you could consider... sugar was competing with saturated fat, but to highlight the inadequacies of the other thing. And that's what it was doing. That's good advertising.
In technology, news. Facebook, Twitter, and news organizations, including Agence France-Presse, have joined a coalition of media and technology groups seeking to filter out online misinformation and improve news quality on social networks. An initiative backed by Google called First Draft News announced that 20 news organizations will join its partner network to share information on best practices for journalism in the online age. We are not going to solve these problems overnight, but we are certainly not going to solve them as individual organizations, said Jenny Sargent, managing director of First Draft, adding that the partner network will help advance the organization's goal of improving news online and on social networks. Also from Jenny Sargent, quote, "We live in a time when trust and truth are issues that all newsrooms and increasingly the social platforms themselves are facing." I don't know. Call me crazy. But I don't know that I necessarily want left-leaning Google, left-leaning Facebook, left-leaning Twitter, left-leaning YouTube, left-leaning The New York Times, left-leaning BuzzFeed News, left-leaning CNN, left-leaning ProPublica, left-leaning The Telegraph, and left-leaning No, Al Jazeera. They're involved in this.
Because they are a respected news source.
Left-leaning Amnesty International coming together to improve online news. Who do I trust in this actual organization? The Washington Post, they're okay. ABC News of Australia. Australia? I don't know. It's because ABC News of the United States is a is the marketing arm of the Disney Corporation. They don't do news over there. They do Disney synergy. So they're not really news anymore. ProPublica, yeah, they got the, but left-leaning organization. France Info, couldn't say. Le Monde, they're generally open-minded. The International Business Times UK, I would actually say, is a right-leaning organization. The only right-leaning organization that I see here, Eurovision News Exchange, couldn't tell you. International Fact-Checking Network, I know that they're fairly neutral. Duke Reporters Lab, fairly neutral. American Press Institute, by virtue of its membership, a little bit left-leaning, but certainly committed to principles of balanced, even-handed journalism. Who's going to wield the influence here? Well, who's got the money? Facebook, Twitter, Google.
But again, we have when we had this conversation, organizations talking about news being on Facebook and being filtered out to what is either most popular. This is just on a larger scheme. So not only are we talking about just Facebook, we're talking about every single news, air quote news, outlet that you just listed. And you know what? That's a good and bad thing about the internet. The fact that I can from anywhere pull up my phone and Google some sort of news topic and I will get a complete list of or stories to go through. I know the correct sites to go to get an unbiased look, but that's also the bad thing. The bad thing with the internet is we have a situation where anybody can go on and write news.
When I see a large number of left-leaning organizations saying that they are going to get together and improve news quality and combat misinformation, that scares the living hell out of me. By the way, I would feel exactly the same if I saw a lot of right-wing news organizations coming together to say the same thing. If this was Fox News and Alex Jones and Matt Drudge.
I was going to say, if it was all right-leaning, basically the internet would turn into an InfoWars.
And the Washington Times and the Wall Street Journal coming together and saying, we're going to improve news quality.
Rush Limbaugh's the czar of
the internet. I don't want you guys doing it either. But I absolutely do not want Facebook, Google, and Twitter involved in this because they have a demonstrated record of getting it wrong.
Again, as you just said, these are all the companies that have the money. And as we've talked about, Facebook, when we were having the problems and they were coming out and saying, no, we're not promoting Democratic-backed information. We're not promoting left-leaning news.
We're just Jimmy in the search results, so you only see good things about Hillary.
Come on.
Yeah.
Are you going to buy it?
No.
No, of course
not. The founders of those organizations are holding massive fundraisers for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Your bias is the company that you keep in that case. And, of course, Google and Facebook love to run around and say, well, we're not news organizations. Huh? We don't, because Facebook had that whole flap last week where they took down the photo from the Vietnam War because some idiot, probably from South Carolina, gets on their keyboard and they're like, that's child pornography. You got to get that child pornography off your website or I was going to call the FBI.
It's true.
And because there are no adults in the room at Facebook, nobody looks at it and says, wait a minute, this is one of the most famous images of the 20th century.
But you can't say that you aren't a news source for people on the internet to use and then come out in this coalition.
No. We're Facebook. We're not a news organization. We just publish other people's news.
Exactly.
And tell you which stories to read. But that doesn't make us a news organization.
But you
give
can't
me a break.
Come out on this board and say, actually, we're not a news outlet, but we're going to promote what you see. This is what it is. All these companies, and especially the big ones, play the biggest roles. And one thing that you had said before, we're going to get to a situation where all of these smaller news sources that people go to are going to be completely pushed out. They're going to become non-existent.
You know what?
You were never going to see them again.
You know what this is? There's another phrase that you could call this organization. Google calls it First Draft. You could call it a Ministry of Information. That's what you could call it. Because the collective reach of these organizations gives them extrajudicial power and gives them extra sovereign power and extra legislative power, which means they're there to decide what is news and what isn't. Not just for us in the United States, but all over the world. The European Union will have something to say about this. Hopefully, once again, we in the United States do not have to hope that the European will do for us the job we should be doing ourselves of regulating these organizations and checking their power. But that's the way it goes right now. Don't think for a second that powerful multi-billion dollar organizations like Facebook and Google, which owns YouTube, by the way, for those who don't know that, don't have a vested interest in shaping news coverage and don't have a vested interest in making sure that certain stories don't get out to you. I already talked about what happened with the Colin Powell coverage today.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if these clowns, if this consortium of idiots, and I don't care if you're on the left, I don't care if you're on the right, if you're in the business of making money off the news, you shouldn't be in the consortium deciding what is news.
Yeah, because those few stories that you did see with actually pulling the news content out of the Colin Powell hack, you won't see them.
No, you won't.
And again, we say it. Do not use Facebook for anything other than looking at friends' pictures and looking at stupid memes. Do not use it as a reliable news source.
Yeah.
It's the same thing we've said multiple times about Huffington Post. These are not reliable.
It should say right across the top, for entertainment purposes only. And then that might help, but some people still won't get it.
If only we ruled the world, Derek.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
If you like autumn, we're heading into that weather pattern now. Summer's drawing to an end, Lisa. The hot day's done. We got to get through some thunderstorms. Those should be blowing out of here in the next few minutes. After that, it's going to dry up and cool off. Lows tonight in the 50s downtown. Look for possibly some upper 40s in those cooler suburbs. Tomorrow, sunny day. Temperatures in the mid-60s during the day, mid-50s tomorrow night. Friday, another sunny day. Temperature around 70, mid-50s Friday night. Bit of a break in the humidity both of those days. Saturday, another winter. High in the mid-70s, low in the mid-60s. Definitely lower humidity. Slight chance we might get some showers late in the day on Saturday. Sunday, opening day at Gillette Stadium. Rain. 90% chance of showers, high in the mid-70s, low on Sunday in the mid-60s. So that's hot, that's humid, and that's thunderstorms. Happy.
Which will make a very angry Derek.
Happy opening day for the Patriots every single year, Lisa Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
Every single year.
Do you have your Patriots poncho ready?
I don't even have a Patriots poncho. We've had 1 year in the last four when it has not rained on opening day. And if we open on the road, the weather's beautiful that day, and then it rains on our opening day. If we open at home, it rains that day, and then there's no rain the following Sunday. Pats fans can't get a break. Pats fans, you know what that's like.
You already have the Telemer Dew on ice.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're good to go.
Ooh.
It's there's gonna be some
Tailgating with you fellas is no joke.
I gotta do it twice next week, so I may be signing off permanently next Wednesday. We'll see. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention right here on WMFO Medford?
Wholesomeness, quality, convenience, value for your dollar. These are just a few things to consider when you're buying beef for your freezer. Basically, you have three choices. You can buy beef as a side or a quarter, you can buy wholesale cuts, or you can choose retail cuts. And deciding which to buy, you should consider the amount of beef you can store in your freezer, the amount your family can use in a reasonable time, and the kinds of meat your family enjoys. If your family likes steak, for example, it's probably best to buy a large quantity of the kind they like when it's a featured special at your retail store. A side of beef, on the other hand, will give you about one-third steaks, one-third roasts, and one-third stew or ground beef. If you want to learn more about buying meat for your